Support for Living on Earth comes from listeners like you. To make a donation, please use the link to the left of this webpage. And thanks.
Think oysters, and you think food, raw or Rockefeller, fried or on the half shell. But if you think oysters are just good for food or making pearls, think again. The lowly mollusks are critical for the economic and ecologic health of our oceans, shores, and bays. Oyster reefs were once dominant features in the world's estuaries. Today, scientists warn they could be nearing extinction. Living on Earth's Bruce Gellerman tells us scientists are now experimenting with artificial methods to restore this vital marine habitat. His story begins where the oysters end.
The Union Oyster House in downtown Boston is the oldest restaurant in continuous service in the United States. It's here that the toothpick was first introduced in America, and John F. Kennedy regularly dined in Booth 18 upstairs. But the real history goes to the oyster. This is the house that the bivalve made famous. In colonial America, oysters were a cheap, abundant staple of the working-class diet. Daniel Webster was a constant customer at Union Oyster. He regularly bellied up to the semicircular bar and downed 3 dozen oysters at a sitting. The famous bar is still here, and you can still see a whole lot of shucking going on.
My name is Anton Christen, originally I'm from Switzerland, and what I do since about 8 years, I shuck oysters over here on the oyster bar.
How many oysters do you go through?
Usually we go through probably on a Saturday between 2,000 to 3,000 pieces. I shuck a lot of oysters.
The oyster is Anton Christen's world, and his weapon against the tough open shell is a granite cobblestone. Christen grabs an oyster in his rubber-gloved hand, inserts a blunt knife between the shells, and taps the knife handle on the stone.
One little crack, that's the way we open.
Wow, that's fast.
Thank you. Whenever I'm down in Welfley for the competition, I bring my rock with me.
That's not cheating?
That's not cheating, you know.
Welfley, Massachusetts is where shuckers from around the world come to compete in the annual Cape Cod Classic.
3, 2, 1, shuck! Live! Championship shucking in Welfley, Massachusetts.
This year, speed shucker William Chopper Young made Swiss cheese out of the competition. When pilgrims first landed on Cape Cod, oyster reefs lined the shoreline and bays. Wellfleet Harbor's cold, clean, salty water, rich in plankton and micronutrients, was the perfect place for oysters to spawn. And it still is.
Wellfleet is the location where the finest tasting oysters in the world are grown.
Bob Prescott can be forgiven if he's a bit biased about Wellfleet's oysters. He's director of the Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Oysters are plentiful in Wellfleet, but these days, as Prescott notes, they're not wild. They're grown, cultivated in the briny bay.
They taste no different than wild oysters, but the actual wild oyster of Wellfleet is gone. It's disappeared twice. We fished them out in the 1800s and we fished them out in the 1700s.
It's the same story around the world. The wild oyster is history, says University of Rhode Island marine biologist Bose Hancock.
We weren't surprised to discover that they were doing badly, but we were very surprised to discover how badly they were doing.
Today, 95% of the oysters that are eaten are farm-raised. Diseases, parasites, and invasive species have taken their toll, but people are the main problem. We've consumed the wild oyster nearly to extinction, because when we throw away their shells, we're literally eating them out of house and home. On the seabed, oyster shells build up over generations to form reefs. A single female oyster can lay 100 million eggs a year, but without the hard shell reef to latch onto, the fertilized oyster larvae die. No oysters, no shells. No shells, no reefs. Bose Hancock says we're rapidly losing one of the world's most important marine habitats.
They're actually the most endangered, the most threatened habitat type in the ocean, is oyster reef. We've lost about 20% of coral reef around the world. We've lost about 50% of mangrove habitat around the world. We've actually lost 85% of oyster reef around the world.
Bose Hancock is coordinating a project with the Nature Conservancy and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to restore the nation's oyster reefs, from Alaska to the Gulf of Mexico, from the Chesapeake Bay to Maine. Scientists call oysters a keystone species. Besides being a source of food, the oyster is an ecosystem engineer that provides critical environmental services.
A good big oyster will filter up to 50 gallons a day. So if you get a reef that's made up of millions of these, we're talking 50 million gallons a day. A lot of water.
In addition to filtering millions of tons of agricultural chemicals that run off into bays and harbors, oyster reefs protect our coastlines from storm surges and create a rich, biologically diverse habitat. Bob Prescott of the Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary.
What we're looking to do is recreate the reefs that were here so that the baby fish, baby crabs, birds, and wildlife that are associated with those reefs can come back.
Building an oyster reef is not as simple as it sounds. An icy wind blows off Lieutenant Island as Bob Prescott and Bose Hancock walk across the tidal flat off Wellfleet Harbor, where they're experimenting with different structures to start oyster reefs.
Restoration science is not textbook stuff yet. It is not cookbook formula. We need to adapt ideas to local environments. Another issue out here at Wellfleet is ice. You get a lot of sea ice in winter. You can just picture how rough that is on a reef you're trying to restore if you've got tides lifting up and lowering big sheets of ice all over the place. So that's something that we need to work with and see how we can adapt our methods to suit.
The challenge, to design something low-cost with the precise chemical composition and texture that tiny oysters will love to latch onto.
So you can see it. You can start to see it from here. See all the rocks, and then in between the rocks are all the treatments. There's different treatments to see what the oysters are going to settle on the best.
Wellfleet's tides move fast and far. We're able to walk a few hundred yards on the mudflat when the tide is out to where volunteers have set up 9 test beds spread out over 2 acres to test 4 different kinds of structures. Oyster mats, shells attached to biodegradable quilt material, spat blocks, which are cement castles embedded with oyster shells, reef balls, round aggregates of concrete and shell, and culch, 50-pound mesh bags of clams and oyster shells saved from the past year's Oyster Fest. It took scores of volunteers like Sarah Martinez to haul the experimental structures to the tidal flat and then do the painstaking task of keeping track of the tiny oysters as they grow.
And then we just need to flip over every shell and we count and measure all the oysters that we find.
Any idea which ones work best? Which one of these treatments?
We haven't really analyzed anything yet, and as Bob said, we haven't finished, but the culch is doing really well.
There's these old shells here.
The old shells are great.
What we've got here is the first year of settlement on these blocks.
Marine biologist Bose Hancock.
What we hope to see in years to come is that that becomes solid oyster. You can't see the cement underneath it. And depending on the strength of the settlement and the rate of growth, it could happen in 1 year, it could happen in 3 years. But I've certainly seen in other states where these kind of structures have become completely covered in oysters to the point where you can't see what they're on. And that happens quite quickly.
Which is hopeful news for the Chesapeake Bay in Virginia and Maryland, where the oyster population has declined 99% in just 15 years. The Oyster Reef Restoration Project there recently received $5 million in federal aid. Again, Bob Prescott of the Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary.
Our goal is to recreate or restore those same kind of habitats that the pilgrims found when they were here. Whether we can ever get back to the natural diversity for this whole harbor, that's not as clear. But we believe, because a reef is a physical structure, that we can get these oysters to rebuild those reefs. But we want to eat oyster reef habitat. There's just no way around that. And we believe you can. But at the same time, we have to leave this habitat somewhere. We have to harvest it at a lower enough level that it continues to exist in big chunks of this harbor.
Farm-raised oysters are fine eating, but homegrown oysters will never replace the vital ecosystem services that wild oysters provide. And hopefully the artificial reefs that scientists now plan to build. For Living on Earth in Wellfleet, Massachusetts, I'm Bruce Gellerman.
Coming up, the cat called Ghosts of the Mountain.
here's this creature that no one ever sees, but it's able to live in the most extreme habitat in the world at heights that make it so difficult to breathe. They live in temperatures so cold that your tears will freeze on your face, in your eyes. And they can become invisible right in front of your eyes.
An expedition in search of the Mongolian snow leopard, just ahead on Living on Earth.
Support for the Environmental Health Desk at Living on Earth comes from the Cedar Tree Foundation. Support also comes from the Richard and Rhoda Goldman Fund for coverage of population and the environment, and from Gilman Ordway for coverage of conservation and environmental change. This is Living on Earth on PRI, Public Radio International.